Macmillan Audio presents To Sleep in a Sea of Stars, written by Christopher Paolini, read by Jennifer Hale. Part 1. Exogenesis. O goddess born of great Anchises' line, the gates of hell are open night and day. Smooth the descent, and easy is the way. But to return and view the cheerful skies, in this the task and mighty labor lies. Aeneid 6.126-129, John Dryden translation. Chapter 1. Dreams. 1. The orange gas giant Zeus hung low above the horizon, huge and heavy and glowing with a ruddy half-light. Around it glittered a field of stars, bright against the black of space, while beneath the giant's lidless glare stretched a gray wasteland streaked with stone. A small huddle of buildings stood in the otherwise desolate expanse, domes and tunnels and windowed enclosures, a lone place of warmth and life amid the alien environment. Inside the compound's cramped lab, Kira struggled to extract the gene sequencer from its alcove in the wall. The machine wasn't that large, but it was heavy and she couldn't get a good grip on it. "Damn it," she muttered and readjusted her stance. Most of their equipment would stay on Adrastea, the Earth-sized moon they had spent the past 4 months surveying. Most of their equipment, but not all. The gene sequencer was part of a xenobiologist's basic kit, and where she went, it went. Besides, the colonists who would soon be arriving on the Shakti Umasati would have newer, better models, not the budget, travel-sized one the company had stuck her with. Kira pulled again. Her fingers slipped, and she sucked in her breath as one of the metal edges sliced her palm. She let go, and upon examining her hand, saw a thin line of blood oozing through the skin. Her lips curled in a snarl, and she hit the gene sequencer hard. That didn't help. Keeping her injured hand knotted in a fist, she paced the lab, breathing heavily while she waited for the pain to subside. Most days, the machine's resistance wouldn't bother her. Most days. But today, dread and sadness outran reason. They would be leaving in the morning, taking off to rejoin their transport, the Fidanza, which was already in orbit around Adra. A few days more, and she and everyone else in the 10-person survey team would get into cryo, and when they woke up at 61 Cygni, 26 days later, they would each go their separate ways. And that would be the last she would see of Alan for how long, she didn't know. Months, at least. If they were unlucky, over a year. Kira closed her eyes, let her head fall back. She sighed, and the sigh turned into a groan. It didn't matter how many times she and Alan had done this dance. It wasn't getting any easier. The opposite, in fact, and she hated it. Really hated it. They'd met the previous year on a large asteroid the Lapsang Trading Corp was planning to mine. Alan had been there to conduct a geological survey. 4 days. That was how long they'd spent together on the asteroid. It had been Alan's laugh and his mess of coppery hair that caught her attention. But it was his careful diligence that impressed Kira. He was good at what he did, and he didn't lose his calm in an emergency. Kira had been alone for so long at that point, she'd been convinced she would never find someone. And yet, seemingly by a miracle, Alan had entered her life. And just like that, there had been someone to care for. Someone who cared for her. They continued to talk, sending long, hollow messages across the stars, and through a combination of luck and bureaucratic maneuvering, they'd managed to get posted together several more times. It wasn't enough for either of them. 2 weeks ago, they'd applied to corporate for permission to be assigned to the same missions as a couple, but there was no guarantee their request would be approved. The Lapsang Corp was expanding in too many areas, with too many projects. Personnel were spread thin. If the request was denied, the only way they'd be able to live together long-term would be to change jobs, find ones that didn't require so much travel. Kira was willing. She'd even checked listings on the net the previous week, but she didn't feel as if she could ask Alan to give up his career with the company for her. Not yet. In the meantime, all they could do was wait for the verdict from corporate.
With how long it took for messages to get back to Alpha Centauri and the slowness of the HR department, the soonest they could expect an answer was the end of next month.
And by then, both she and Alan would have been shipped off in different directions. It was frustrating. Kira's one consolation was Alan himself. He made it all worthwhile. She just wanted to be with him, without having to worry about the other nonsense. She remembered the first time he'd wrapped his arms around her and how wonderful it felt. How warm and safe. And she thought of the letter he'd written her after their first meeting. Of all the vulnerable, heartfelt things he'd said, no one had ever made such an effort with her before. He'd always had time for her. Always shown her kindness in ways large and small. Like the custom case he'd made for her chip lab before her trip up to the Arctic. The memories would have made Kira smile, but her hand still hurt. And she couldn't forget what the morning would bring. "Come on, you bastard," she said, and strode over to the gene sequencer and yanked on it with all her strength. With a screech of protest, it moved. 2. That night, the team gathered in the mess hall to celebrate the end of the mission. Kira was in no mood for festivities, but tradition was tradition. Whether or not it went well, finishing an expedition was an occasion worth marking. She'd put on a dress, green with gold trim, and spent an hour fixing her hair into a pile of curls high on her head. It wasn't much, but she knew Alan would appreciate the effort. He always did. She was right. The moment he saw her in the corridor outside her cabin, his face lit up, and he swept her into his arms. She buried her forehead into the front of his shirt and said, "You know, we don't have to go." "I know," he said, "but we should put in an appearance." And he kissed her on the forehead. She forced a smile. "Fine, you win. That's my girl." He smiled back and tucked a stray curl behind her left ear. Kira did the same with one of his locks. It never ceased to amaze her how bright his hair was against his pale skin. Unlike the rest of them, Alan never seemed to tan, no matter how long he spent outside or under a spaceship's full-spectrum lights. "All right," she said in a low voice, "let's do this." The mess hall was full when they arrived. The other 8 members of the survey team were crammed in around the narrow tables. Some of Hugo's beloved Scramrock was blasting over the speakers. Maria Lise was handing out cups filled with punch from the large plastic bowl on the counter, and Jenin was dancing as if he'd had a liter of rotgut. Maybe he had. Kira tightened her arm around Alan's waist and did her best to put on a cheery expression. Now wasn't the time to dwell on depressing thoughts. It wasn't. But she couldn't help it. Seppo headed straight for them. The botanist had pulled back his hair into a topknot for the night's event, which only accentuated the angles of his thin-boned face. 4 hours, he said, coming close. The drink slopped out of his cup as he gestured. 4 hours! That's how long it took me to dig my crawler free. Sorry, Seppo, said Alan, sounding amused. I told you we couldn't get to you before then. Bah! I had sands in my skin suit. Do you know how uncomfortable that was? I am rubbed raw in 6 places. Look! He pulled up the fringe of his ratty shirt to show a red line of skin across his belly where the lower seam of his skin suit had chafed. Kira said, "Tell you what, I'll buy you a drink on Vyborg to make up for it. How about that?" Seppo lifted a hand and pointed in her general direction. "That would be acceptable compensation, but no more sand." "No more sand," she agreed. "And you," said Seppo, swinging his finger toward Alan, "you, no." As the botanist tottered off, Kira looked up at Alan. "What was that about?" Alan chuckled. "No idea. But it's sure gonna be strange not having him around." "Yeah." After a round of drinks and conversation, Kira retreated to the back of the room and leaned against a corner. As much as she didn't want to lose Alan again, she also didn't want to say farewell to the rest of the team. The 4 months on Adra had forged them into a family. An odd, misshapen family, but one she cared for all the same. Leaving them would hurt. And the closer that moment came,
the more Kira realized just how much it was going to hurt. She took another long drink of the orange-flavored punch. She'd been through this before. Adra wasn't the first prospective colony the company had posted her to, and after 7 years spent jetting around from one blasted rock to another, Kira had begun to feel a serious need for friends, family, companionship. And now she was about to leave all that behind, again. Alan felt the same. She could see it in his eyes as he moved around the room, chatting with members of the team. She thought perhaps some of the others were also sad, but they papered over it with drink and dance and laughs that were too shrill to be entirely genuine. She made a face and downed the rest of the punch. Time for a refill. The scram rock was pounding louder than before. Something by Todash and the boys, and their lead singer was howling, "To flee, and there's nothing at the door. Hey, there's nothing at the door. Babe, what's that knocking at the door?" And her voice was climbing to a wavering saw blade crescendo that sounded as if her vocal cords were about to snap. Kira pushed herself away from the wall and was about to start for the punch bowl when she saw Mendoza, the expedition boss, clearing a path toward her. Easy for him, he was built like a barrel. She'd often wondered if he'd grown up on a high G colony like Shinzar, but Mendoza denied it when she asked. Claimed he was from a habring somewhere around Alpha Centauri. She wasn't entirely sure she believed him. "Kira, need to talk with you," he said, coming near. "What?" "We have a problem." She snorted, "There's always a problem." Mendoza shrugged and mopped his forehead with a handkerchief he pulled from the back pocket of his pants. His forehead reflected bright spots from the strings of colored lights draped across the ceiling, and there were blotches under his arms. "Can't say you're wrong, but this needs fixing. One of the drones down south went dead. Looks like a storm took it out." "So, send another one." "They're too far away and we don't have time to print a replacement. Last thing the drone detected was some organic material along the coastline. Needs to be checked before we leave."
"Oh, come on. You really want me to head out tomorrow? I've already cataloged every microbe on Adra."
A trip like that would cost her the morning with Alan, and Kira was damned if she was going to give up any of their remaining time together. Mendoza gave her a steady, "Are you bullshitting me?" look from under his brows. "Regs are regs, Kira. We can't risk the colonists running into something nasty. Something like the Scourge. You don't want that on your conscience. You really don't." She went to take another drink and realized her cup was still empty.
"Jesus, send Ivanova.
The drones are hers, and she can run a chip lab as well as I can. There's..."
"You're going," said Mendoza, steel in his voice. "Oh, 600, and I don't want to hear any more about it." Then his expression softened somewhat. "Sorry, but you're our xenobiologist, and regs..."
"And regs are regs," said Kira.
Yeah, I'll do it.
But I'm telling you, it's not worth it."
Mendoza patted her on the shoulder. "Good. I hope it isn't."
As he left, a text popped up in the corner of Kira's vision. "Hey, babe, everything okay?"
"Alan."
Sub-vocalizing her answer, she wrote, "Yeah,
all good. Just some extra work. Tell you about it later. Kira."
From across the room, he gave her a goofy thumbs up, and her lips quirked despite herself. Then she fixed her gaze on the punch bowl and made a beeline for it. She really needed another drink. Marie-Elise intercepted her at the bowl, moving with the studied grace of an ex-dancer. As always, her mouth was pulled off center, as if she were about to break into a crooked smile or deliver a scathing witticism, and Kira had heard more than a few from her. She was tall to begin with, and with the shiny black heels she'd printed for the party, she was a whole head taller than Kira.
"I'm going to miss you, Shelley," said Marie-Elise.
She bent down and gave Kira a kiss on each cheek.
"Same here,"
said Kira, feeling herself getting misty. Along with Alan, Marie-Elise had become her closest friend on the team. They'd spent long days together in the field, Kira studying the microbes of Adrastea, while Marie-Elise studied the lakes and rivers and the deposits of water hidden deep underground.
"Ah, cheer up now. You will message me, yes? I want to hear everything about you and Alan, and I will message you, okay?"
"Yes, I promise." For the rest of the evening, Kira worked to forget the future. She danced with Marie-Elise. She swapped jokes with Jenin and barbs with Faisal. For the thousandth time, she complimented Hugo on his cooking. She arm-wrestled Mendoza, and lost, and sang a horribly off-key duet with Ivanova. And whenever possible, she kept her arm around Alan. Even when they weren't talking or looking at each other, she could feel him, and his touch was a comfort. Once she'd had enough punch, Kira allowed the others to talk her into pulling out her concertina. Then the canned music was put on hold and everyone gathered round. Alan by her side, Marie-Elise by her knee, while Kira played a collection of spacers' reels. And they laughed, and they danced, and they drank. And for a time, all was good. 3. It was well past midnight, and the party was still in full swing when Alan signaled to her with a motion of his chin. Kira understood, and without a word, they slipped out of the mess hall. They leaned on each other as they made their way through the compound, careful to keep their cups of punch from spilling. Kira wasn't used to the bare look of the corridors. Normally, overlays covered them, and stacks of samples, supplies, and spare equipment sat along the walls. But all that was gone now. Over the past week, she and the rest of the team had stripped the place in preparation for leaving. If not for the music echoing behind them and the dim emergency lights along the floor, the base would have seemed abandoned. Kira shivered and hugged Alan closer. Outside, the wind was howling, an eerie rushing that made the roof and walls creak. When they arrived at the door to the hydroponics bay, Alan didn't hit the release button but looked down at her, a smile dancing about his lips. "What?" she said. "Nothing. Just grateful to be with you." And he gave her a quick peck on the lips. She went in for a peck of her own. The punch had put her in a mood. But he laughed, pulled his head away, and hit the button. The door slid open with a solid thunk. Warm air wafted over them, along with the sound of dripping water and the gentle perfume of flowering plants. The hydroponics bay was Kira's favorite place in the compound. It reminded her of home, of the long rows of hothouse gardens she'd spent time in as a kid on the colony planet of Wayland. During long-haul expeditions like the one to Adra, it was standard procedure to grow some of their own food, partly so they could test the viability of the native soil, partly to reduce the amount of supplies they had to bring with them, but mostly to break the deadly monotony of the freeze-dried meal packs the company supplied them with. Tomorrow, Seppo would rip out the plants and stuff them into the incinerator. None of them would survive until the colonists arrived, and it was bad practice to leave piles of biological material sitting around where they could, if the compound were breached, enter the environment in an uncontrolled manner. But for tonight, the hydroponics bay was still full of lettuce, radishes, parsley, tomatoes, clusters of zucchini stems, and the numerous other crops Seppo had been experimenting with on Adra. But that wasn't all. Amid the dim racks, Kira saw 7 pots laid out in an arc. In each pot stood a tall, thin stem topped with a delicate purple flower that drooped under its own weight. A cluster of pollen-tipped stamens extended from within each blossom like bursts of fireworks, while white speckles adorned their velvety inner throats. Midnight constellations, her favorite flower. Her father had raised them, and even with his horticultural talent, they had given him no end of trouble. They were temperamental, prone to scab and blight, and intolerant of the slightest imbalance of nutrients. "Alan," she said, overcome.
"I remember you mentioned how much you liked them," he said.
"But how did you manage to...
grow them?" He smiled at her, clearly pleased by her reaction. "Seppo helped. He had the seeds on file. We printed them out and spent the last 3 weeks trying to keep the damn things from dying."
"They're wonderful," Kira said, not even trying to hide the emotion in her voice. He hugged her close.
"Good,"
he said, his voice half muffled in her hair.
"I wanted to do something special for you before.
The word burned in her mind.
"Thank you," she said.
She separated from him just long enough to examine the flowers. Their spicy, overly sweet scent struck her with the full, staggering force of childhood nostalgia. "Thank you," she repeated, coming back to Alan. "Thank you, thank you, thank you." She pressed her lips against his, and for a long while they kissed. "Here," said Alan, when they broke for air. He pulled an insulated blanket from under one of the racks of potato plants and spread it out within the arc of midnight constellations. They settled there, cuddling and sipping their punch. Outside, the baleful immensity of Zeus still hung overhead, visible through the clear pressure dome of the hydroponics bay. When they'd first arrived on Adra, the sight of the gas giant had filled Kira with apprehension. Every instinct in her screamed that Zeus was going to fall out of the sky and crush them. It seemed impossible anything so large could remain suspended overhead without support. In time, though, she'd grown accustomed to the sight, and now she admired the magnificence of the gas giant. It needed no overlays to catch the eye. Before. Kira shivered. Before they left. Before she and Alan had to part. They'd already used up their vacation days, and the company wouldn't give them more than a few days of downtime back at 61 Cygni. "Hey, what's wrong?" said Alan, his voice soft with sympathy. "You know." "Yeah. This isn't getting any easier. I thought it would, but..." She sniffed and shook her head. Audra was their fourth time shipping together, and it was by far their longest shared posting. "I don't know when I'm going to see you next, and I love you, Alan, and having to say goodbye every few months really sucks." He stared at her serious. His hazel eyes gleamed in the light from Zeus. "So then let's not." Her heart lurched, and for a moment, time seemed to stop. She'd been dreading that exact response for months now. When her voice started working again, she said, "What do you mean?"
"I mean, let's not do this bouncing around anymore. I can't take it either."
His expression was so open, so earnest. She couldn't help but feel a flicker of hope. Surely he wasn't. What would...
"Let's apply for berths on the Sakti Umasati."
She blinked. "As colonists." He nodded, eager. "As colonists. Company employees are pretty much guaranteed slots, and Audra's gonna need all the xenobiologists and geologists they can get."
Kira laughed and then caught his expression.
"You're serious?"
"Serious as a pressure breach."
"That's just the drink talking." He put a hand on her cheek.
"No, Kira, it's not. I know this would be a huge change for both of us, but I also know you're sick of jetting around from one rock to another, and I don't want to wait another 6 months to see you. I really don't."
Tears welled up in her eyes. "I don't want that either."
He cocked his head.
"So then let's not."
Kira half laughed and looked up at Zeus while she tried to process her emotions. What he was suggesting was everything she'd hoped for, everything she'd dreamed of. She just hadn't expected it to happen so fast. But she loved Alan, and if this meant they could be together, then she wanted it. She wanted him. The meteor-bright spark that was the Fidanza sailed past overhead, in low orbit between Audra and the gas giant. She wiped her eyes. "I don't think the odds are as good as you say. Colonies only really want pair-bonded couples, you know that."
"Yes, I do," said Alan.
A sense of unreality caused Kira to grip the floor as he knelt in front of her, and from his front pocket produced a small wooden box. He opened it. Nestled inside was a ring of gray metal, set with a bluish-purple gem, startling in its brilliancy. The lump in Alan's throat bobbed as he swallowed. "Kira Navarez, you asked me once what I saw among the stars. I told you I saw questions. Now I see you. I see us." He took a breath.
"Kira, will you do me the honor of joining your life with mine? Will you be my wife, as I will be your husband? Will..."
"Yes," she said, all worries lost in the flush of warmth that suffused her. She put her hands around the back of his neck and kissed him, tenderly at first, and then with increasing passion. "Yes, Ellen J. Barnes. Yes, I'll marry you. Yes, 1,000 times, yes." She watched as he took her hand and slid the ring onto her finger. The band was cold and heavy, but the heaviness was a comforting one. "The ring is iron," he said softly. "I had Jenin smelt it from ore I brought him. Iron because it represents the bones of Adrastea. The stone is tesserite. Wasn't easy to find, but I know how much you like it." Kira nodded without meaning to. Tesserite was unique to Adrastea. It was similar to Benitoite, with a greater tendency toward purple. It was by far her favorite rock on the planet, but it was exceedingly rare. Alan must have searched long and hard to locate such a large, high-quality piece. She brushed one of his coppery locks away from his forehead, and she stared into his beautiful, soft eyes, wondering how she had gotten so lucky, how either of them had managed to find the other in the whole damn galaxy. "I love you," she whispered.
"I love you too," he said.
Then Kira laughed, feeling almost hysterical, and wiped her eyes.
The ring scraped her eyebrow. It was going to take time to get used to its presence.
Shit. Are we really going to do this?
Yeah, said Alan, with his comforting self-confidence. We sure are.
Good.
He pulled her closer then, his body hot against hers. Kira responded with equal need, equal desire, clinging to him as if she were trying to press herself through his skin and into his flesh until the two of them became one. Together, they moved with frantic urgency within the arc of potted flowers, matching the rhythms of their bodies, oblivious to the orange gas giant that hung high overhead, huge and glaring. Chapter 2. Reliquary. 1. Kira tightened her grip on the arms of her seat as the suborbital shuttle pitched downward, descending toward island number 302-01-0010, just off the western coast of Legba, the main continent in the southern hemisphere. The island lay on the 52nd parallel, in a large bay guarded by several granite reefs, and was the last known location of the disabled drone. A sheet of fire engulfed the front of the cockpit as the shuttle burned through Adrastea's thin atmosphere at almost 7,500 clicks per hour. The flames looked as if they were only a few inches from Kira's face, yet she felt no heat. Around them, the hull rattled and groaned. She closed her eyes, but the flames remained jumping and writhing in front of her, bright as ever.
Hell yeah!
Shouted Negar, next to her, and Kira knew she was grinning like a fiend. Kira gritted her teeth. The shuttle was perfectly safe, wrapped in the mag shield that protected it from the white-hot inferno outside. 4 months on the planet, hundreds of flights, and there hadn't been a single accident. Geiger, the pseudo-intelligence that piloted the shuttle, had a nearly flawless record. The only time it had malfunctioned was when some hotshot asteroid captain had tried to optimize a copy and ended up killing his crew as a result. Safety record notwithstanding, Kira still hated re-entry. The noise and the shaking made her feel as if the shuttle were about to break up, and nothing could convince her otherwise. Plus, the display wasn't doing anything to help her hangover. She'd popped a pill before leaving Alan in his cabin, but it had yet to cut the pain. It was her own fault. She should have known better. She did know better. But emotion had trumped judgment last night. She turned off the feed from the shuttle's cameras and concentrated on breathing.
We're getting married.
It still didn't feel real. She'd spent the whole morning with a silly smile plastered on her face. No doubt she'd look like an idiot. She touched her sternum, fingering Alan's ring under her skin suit. They hadn't told the others yet, so she'd chosen to wear the ring on a chain for the time being. But they were planning to that evening. Kira was looking forward to seeing everyone's reactions, even if the announcement didn't come as much of a surprise. Once they were on the Fidanza, they would get Captain Ravenna to make it official, and then Alan would be hers. And she his. And they could begin to build their future together. Marriage, a change of jobs, settling down on just one planet, family of her own, helping to build a new colony. As Alan had said, it would be a huge change, but Kira felt ready for the shift, more than ready. It was the life she'd always hoped for, but that, as the years crept by, had seemed increasingly unlikely. After they finished making love, they had stayed up for hours, talking and talking. They'd discussed the best places to settle on Adrastea, the timeline of the terraforming effort, and all the activities possible on and off the moon. Alan went into great detail about the type of dome house he wanted to build. And it has to have a hot tub big enough to stretch out without touching the other side, so we can have a proper bath, not like these dinky little showers we've been stuck with. And Kira had listened, touched by his passion. In turn, she talked about how she wanted greenhouses like the ones on Wayland, and they both agreed that whatever they did, it was going to be better done together. Kira's only regret was that she'd drunk so much. Everything after Alan's proposal had become something of a blur. Delving into her overlay, she pulled up her records from the previous night. She saw Alan kneeling in front of her again, and she heard him say, "I love you too," before wrapping her in his embrace a minute later. When she'd had her implants installed as a kid, her parents hadn't paid for a system that allowed for full sense recording. No touch, taste, or smell, as they'd considered it an unnecessary extravagance. For the first time, Kira wished they hadn't been so practically minded. She wanted to feel what she'd felt that night. She wanted to feel it for the rest of her life.
Once they returned to Vyborg Station, she decided, she would use her bonus to have the necessary upgrades installed. Memories like ones from yesterday were too precious to lose, and she was determined not to let any more slip away. As for her family back on Wayland, Kira's smile faded somewhat. They wouldn't be happy about her living so far from home, but she knew they would understand. Her parents had done something similar themselves, after all, emigrating from Stuart's world around Alpha Centauri before she was born. And her father was always talking about how it was humanity's grand goal to spread out among the stars. They'd supported her decision to become a xenobiologist in the first place, and Kira knew they would support her current decision. Returning to her overlays, she opened the most recent video from Wayland. She'd already watched it twice since it had arrived a month ago, but right then, she felt a sudden urge to see her home and family again. Her parents appeared, as she knew they would, sitting at her dad's workstation. It was early morning, and the light slid in sideways through the west-facing windows. In the distance, the mountains were a jagged silhouette draped along the horizon, nearly lost in a bank of clouds. "Kira," said her dad. He looked the same as always. Her mom had a new haircut. She offered a small smile. "Congratulations on making it to the end of the survey. How are you enjoying your last few days on Adra? Did you find anything interesting in the lake region you told us about?"
"It's been cold here," said her mom. "There was frost on the ground this morning."
Her dad grimaced. "Fortunately, the geothermal is working."
"For now," said her mom.
"For now. Other than that, no real news. The Hensons came by for dinner the other night, and they said..."
Then the study door slammed open, and Istha bounced into view, dressed in her usual nightshirt, a cup of tea in one hand. "Morning, sis."
Kira smiled as she watched them natter on about the doings in the settlement and about their day-to-day activities, the problems with the Agbots tending the crops, the shows they'd been watching, details about the latest batch of plants being released into the planet's ecosystem, and so forth. Then they wished her safe travels, and the video ended. The last frame hung before her, her dad frozen mid-wave, her mom's face at an odd angle as she finished saying, "Love you."
"Love you,"
Kira murmured. She sighed. When had she last managed to visit them? 2 years ago? 3? At least that. Too long by far. The distances and the travel times didn't make it easy. She missed home, which didn't mean she would have been content to just stay on Wayland.
She'd needed to push herself to reach beyond the normal and the mundane.
And she had. For 7 years, she had traveled the far reaches of space. But she was sick of being alone, and sick of being cooped up on one spaceship after another. She was ready for a new challenge, one that balanced the familiar with the alien, the safe with the outlandish.
There on Adra, with Alan, she thought perhaps she would find just such a balance.
2. Halfway through re-entry, the turbulence began to subside, and the EM interference vanished along with the sheets of plasma. Lines of yellow text appeared in the top corner of Kira's vision as the comm link to HQ went live again. She scrolled through the messages, catching up with the rest of the survey team. Faisal, their doctor, was being his usual annoying self, but other than that, nothing interesting. A new window popped up. "How's the flight, babe?" "Alan." Kira was unprepared for the sudden tenderness his concern evoked in her. She smiled again as she sub-vocalized her response. "No problems here. You?"
"Kira."
"Just doing a last bit of pickup. Thrilling stuff. Want me to clear out your cabin for you?"
"Alan."
She smiled. "Thanks, but I'll take care of it when I'm back. Kira."
"Okay.
Listen, we didn't really get a chance to talk this morning, and I wanted to check. You still okay with everything from last night?"
"Alan."
"You mean, do I still want to marry you and settle here on Adra?"
"Kira."
She followed up before he could reply.
"Yes, my answer is still yes, Kira."
"Good."
"Alan."
"What about you? Are you still okay?"
"Kira."
Her breath caught a little as she sent the text.
His answer was swift.
"Absolutely. I just wanted to make sure you were doing all right.
Alan."
She felt herself soften. "More than all right. And I appreciate that you bothered to check, Kira."
"Always, babe. Or should I say, fiance?"
"Alan." Kira made a delighted sound. It came out more choked than intended.
All good?
Negar asked, and Kira could feel the pilot's eyes on her.
More than good.
She and Alan continued to talk until the retro rockets kicked in, jolting her back to full awareness of her surroundings.
Gotta go. We're about to land. Touch base later, Kira.
Okay. Have fun. Alan.
Right,
Kira.
Then Geiger spoke in her ear.
Touchdown in 10, 9, 8, 7.
His voice was calm and emotionless, with a hint of a cultured Magellan accent. She thought of him as a Heinlein. He sounded as if he would be named Heinlein if he were a person. Flesh and blood, that is. With a body. They landed with a short drop that caused her stomach to lurch and her heart to race. The shuttle listed a few degrees to the left as it sank into the dirt.
Don't take too long, you hear? Said Negar, unclipping her harness.
Everything about her was neat and compact, from her finely carved features to the folds in her jumpsuit to the thin lines of braids that formed a wide strip across her head. On her lapel, she wore an ever-present gold pin, a memorial to co-workers lost on the job.
Hugo said he's cooking a fresh batch of cinnamon rolls as a special treat before blastoff. Lest we hurry, they'll all be gone by the time we get back.
Kira pulled off her own harness. I won't be a minute.
Better not, honey. I'd kill for those rolls.
The stale smell of reprocessed air hit Kira's nose as she slipped on her helmet. Adrastea's atmosphere was thick enough to breathe, but it would kill you if you tried. Not enough oxygen. Not yet. And changing that would take decades. The lack of oxygen also meant that Audra didn't have an ozone layer. Everyone who ventured outside had to be fully shielded against UV and other forms of radiation. Otherwise, you were liable to get the worst sunburn of your life.
At least the temperature's bearable, thought Kira.
She wouldn't even have to turn on the heater in her skin suit. She climbed into the narrow airlock and pulled the inner hatch shut behind her. It closed with a metallic boom.
Atmosphere exchange initialized. Please stand by, said Geiger in her ear.
The indicator turned green. Kira spun the wheel in the center of the outer hatch and then pushed. The seal broke with a sticky, tearing sound, and the reddish light of Adrastea's sky flooded the airlock. The island was an unlovely heap of rocks and rust-colored soil, large enough that she couldn't see the far side, only the near coast. Beyond the edge of land spread an expanse of gray water, like a sheet of hammered lead, the tips of the waves highlighted with the ruddy light from the cloudless sky. A poison ocean,
heavy with cadmium, mercury, and copper.
Kira jumped down from the airlock and closed it behind her. She frowned as she studied the telemetry from the downed drone. The organic material it had detected wasn't by the water as she'd expected, but rather at the top of a wide hill a few hundred meters to the south.
Okay, then.
She made her way across the fractured ground, picking her steps with care. As she walked, blocks of text popped up in front of her, providing info on the chemical composition, local temperature, density, likely age, and radioactivity of different parts of the landscape. The scanner on her belt fed the readings into her overlays, while simultaneously transmitting them back to the shuttle. Kira dutifully reviewed the text, but saw nothing new. The few times she felt compelled to take a soil sample, the results were as boring as ever. Minerals, traces of organic and pre-organic compounds, and a scattering of anaerobic bacteria. At the top of the hill, she found a flat spread of rock scored with deep grooves from the last planetary glaciation. A patch of orange, lichen-like bacteria covered much of the rock. Kira recognized the species at first glance, B. lumisii, but she took a scraping just to confirm. Biologically, there wasn't much of interest on Adrastea. Her most notable find had been a species of methane-eating bacteria beneath the Arctic ice sheet, bacteria that had a somewhat unusual lipid structure on their cellular walls, but that was it. She'd write up an overview of Adrastea's biome, of course, and if she was lucky, she might get it published in a couple of the more obscure journals, but it wasn't much to crow about. Still, the absence of more developed forms of life was a plus when it came to terraforming. It left the moon a lump of raw clay, suitable for remolding however the company and the settlers saw fit. Unlike on Eidolon, beautiful, deadly Eidolon, they wouldn't have to be constantly fighting the native flora and fauna. While Kira waited for her chip lab to finish its analysis, she walked to the crest of the hill, took in the view of the rough-scraped rocks and the metallic ocean. She frowned as she remembered how long it would be before they could stock the oceans with anything more than gene-spliced algae and plankton. This is going to be our home. It was a sobering thought, but not depressing. Wayland wasn't much friendlier, and Kira remembered the massive improvements she'd seen on the planet over the course of her childhood. Once barren dirt converted to fertile soil, the spread of green growing things across the landscape, the ability to walk around outside for a limited time without supplemental oxygen. She had optimism. Adrastea was more habitable than 99-some% of the planets in the galaxy. By astronomical standards, it was an almost perfect analog for Earth. More similar than a high-G planet like Shinzar, and even more similar than Venus with its floating cloud cities. Whatever the difficulties Adrastea presented, she was willing to face them if it meant she and Alan could be together.
We're getting married.
Kira grinned and lifted her arms overhead, fingers splayed and stared straight up, feeling as if she were about to burst. Nothing had ever felt so right. A high-pitched beep sounded in her ear. 3. The chip lab had finished. She checked the readout. The bacteria was B. lumisii, as she'd thought. Kira sighed and turned off the device. Mendoza had been right. It was their responsibility to check out the growth, but it was still a huge waste of time. Whatever, back to HQ and Alan, and then they could blast off for the Fidanza. Kira started to leave the hill, and then, out of curiosity, she looked toward where the drone had crashed. Nagar had ID'd and tagged the location during the shuttle's descent. There, a click and a half from the coast, near the center of the island, she saw a yellow box outlining a patch of ground next to... Huh. A formation of jagged, pillar-shaped rocks stabbed out of the ground at a steep sideways angle. In all the places Kira had visited on Adra, and there were many, she hadn't seen anything quite like it. Petra, select visual target. Analyze. Her system responded. An outline flashed around the formation, and then a long list of elements scrolled next to it. Kira's eyebrows rose. She wasn't a geologist like Alan, but she knew enough to realize how unusual it was to have so many elements clustered together. Thermals up, she muttered. Her visor darkened, and the world around her became an impressionistic painting of blues, blacks, and, where the ground had absorbed the warmth of the sun, muted reds. As expected, the formation perfectly matched the ambient temperature. Hey, check this out, Kira. And she forwarded the readings to Alan. Less than a minute later. The hell? You sure your equipment is... Alan. Pretty sure. What do you think it is? Kira. Dunno. Might be a lava extrusion? Can you get a scan of it? Maybe pick up a few samples? Dirt, rock, whatever's convenient? Alan. If you really want. It's a bit of a hike, though. Kira. I'll make it worth your while. Alan. I like the sound of that, babe. Kira. Hey, now. Alan. She smirked and swapped out of the infrared as she started down the hill. Nagar, do you read? A crackle of static and then, what's up? I'm gonna be another half hour, so sorry. Damn it! Those rolls aren't gonna last more than... I know! There's something I have to investigate for Alan. What? Some rocks, farther inland. You gonna give up Hugo cinnamon rolls for that? Sorry. You know how it is. Besides, haven't seen anything quite like this before. A moment of silence. Fine, but you better haul ass, you hear me? Roger that, hauling ass, said Kira. She chuckled and quickened her pace. Where the uneven ground allowed, she jogged, and 10 minutes later she arrived at the tilted outcropping. It was bigger than she'd realized. The highest point was a full 7 meters overhead, and the base of the formation was over 20 meters across. Wider even than the shuttle was long. The broken cluster of columns, black and faceted, reminded her of basalt, but their surface had an oily sheen similar to that of coal or graphite. There was something about the appearance of the rocks that Kira found off-putting. They were too dark, too stark and sharp-edged, too different from the rest of the landscape, a ruined spire alone amid the granite wasteland. And though she knew it was her imagination,
An uneasy air seemed to surround the outcropping, like a low vibration just strong enough to annoy. Were she a cat, Kira felt sure her hair would be standing on end. She frowned and scratched her forearms. It sure didn't look like there'd been a volcanic eruption in the area. Okay then, a meteor strike instead? But that didn't make sense either. No blast wall or crater. She walked around the base, scanning. Near the back, she spotted the remnants of the drone. A long strip of broken and melted components dashed against the ground. Hell of a lightning strike, Kira thought. The drone must have been going pretty fast to spread it out like that. She shifted in her suit, still feeling uneasy. Whatever the formation was, she decided she'd leave the mystery for Alan to figure out. It would give him something to do on the flight out of the system. She took a soil sample and then searched until she found a small piece of the black rock that had flaked off. She held it up to the sun. It had a distinct crystalline structure, a fish scale-like pattern that reminded her of woven carbon fiber. Impact crystals? Whatever it was unusual. She tucked the rock into a sample pouch and gave the formation one last look over. A silvery flash several meters off the ground caught her eye. Kira paused, studying it. A crack had split open one of the columns to reveal a jagged white seam within. She checked her overlays. The seam was too deep within the crack to get a good reading. The only thing the scanner could tell her for sure was that it wasn't radioactive. The comm crackled, and Nagar said, "How you doing, Kira?" "Almost done." "Okay, hurry up, would ya?" Yeah, Kira muttered to herself. She eyed the crack, trying to decide if it was worth the effort to climb up and examine. She nearly contacted Alan to ask, but then decided not to bother him. If she didn't find out what the seam was, she knew the question would annoy him until they hopefully returned to Adra and he got a chance to examine it himself. Kira couldn't do that to him. She'd seen him stay up late far too many times, poring over blurred footage from a drone. Besides, the crack wasn't that hard to reach. If she started there and went over to that, then maybe... Kira smiled. The challenge appealed to her. The skin suit didn't have gecko pads installed, but it shouldn't matter, not for an easy climb like this. She walked to a slanted column that ended only a meter above her head. Sucking in a quick breath, she dipped her knees and jumped. The rough edge of the stone dug into her fingers as she caught hold of it. She swung a leg over the top of the column and then, with a grunt, pulled herself up. Kira stayed on all fours, clutching the uneven stone while she waited for her heart to slow. Then she carefully got to her feet atop the column. From there, it was relatively easy. She jumped across to another angled column, which allowed her to scramble up several more, like climbing a giant staircase, aged and crumbling. The last meter was a bit tricky. Kira had to wedge her fingers between two pillars in order to support herself as she swung from one foothold to another. Fortunately, there was a broad ledge beneath the crack she was trying to reach, broad enough that she had room to stand and move about. She shook her hands to get the blood back into her fingers and walked over to the fissure, curious what she would find. Up close, the gleaming white seam looked metallic and ductile, as if it were a vein of pure silver. Only it couldn't be. It wasn't tarnished. She targeted the seam with her overlays. Terbium. Kira barely recognized the name. One of the elements in the platinum group, she thought. She didn't bother looking it up, but she knew it was odd for a metal like that to appear in such a pure form. She leaned forward, peering deeper into the crack as she tried to get a better angle for the scanner. Bang! The sound was as loud as a gunshot. Kira jerked with surprise, and then her foot slipped, and she felt the stone shift underneath her as the whole ledge gave way. She was falling. An image flashed through her mind of her body lying broken on the ground. Kira yelped and flailed, trying to grab the column in front of her, but she missed, and darkness swallowed her. Thunder filled her ears, and lightning shot across her vision as her head bounced against the rocks. Pain shot through her arms and legs as she was pummeled from every direction. The ordeal seemed to last for minutes. Then she felt a sudden sense of weightlessness, and a second later, she slammed into a hard, jagged mound. 4. Kira lay where she was, stunned. The impact had knocked the breath out of her.
She tried to fill her lungs, but her muscles wouldn't respond. For a moment, she felt as if she were choking. And then her diaphragm relaxed and air rushed in. She gasped, desperate for oxygen. After the first few breaths, she forced herself to stop panting. No point in hyperventilating. It would only make it harder to function. In front of her, all she saw was rock and shadow. She checked her overlays. Skin suit still intact, no breaches detected. Elevated pulse and blood pressure, O2 levels high normal, cortisol through the roof, as expected. To her relief, she didn't see any broken bones, although her right elbow felt as if it had been smashed by a hammer, and she knew she was going to be sore and bruised for days. She wiggled her fingers and toes, just to test that they worked.
With her tongue, Kira tabbed 2 doses of liquid Noradon.
She sucked the painkiller from her feeding tube and gulped it down, ignoring its sickly sweet taste. The Noradon would take a few minutes to reach full strength, but she could already feel the pain retreating to a dull ache. She was lying on a pile of stone rubble. The corners and edges dug into her back with unpleasant insistence. Grimacing, she rolled off the mound and onto all fours. The ground was surprisingly flat, flat and covered with a thick layer of dust. It hurt, but Kira pushed herself onto her feet and stood. The movement made her lightheaded. She leaned on her thighs until the feeling passed, and then turned and looked at her surroundings. A ragged shaft of light filtered down from the hole she had fallen through, providing the only source of illumination. By it, she saw that she was inside a circular cave, perhaps 10 meters across. No, not a cave. For a moment, she couldn't make sense of what she was seeing. The incongruity was so great. The ground was flat. The walls were smooth. The ceiling was curved and dome-like. And in the center of this space stood a stalagmite? A waist-high stalagmite that widened as it rose. Kira's mind raced as she tried to imagine how the space could have formed. A whirlpool? A vortex of air? But then there would be ridges everywhere. Grooves. Could it be a lava bubble? But the stone wasn't volcanic. Then she realized. The truth was so unlikely. She hadn't allowed herself to consider the possibility, even though it was obvious. The cave wasn't a cave. It was a room. Fool, she whispered. She wasn't religious, but right then prayer seemed like the only appropriate response. Aliens. Intelligent aliens. A rush of fear and excitement swept through Kira. Her skin went hot. Pinpricks of sweat sprang up across her body, and her pulse started to hammer. Only one other alien artifact had ever been found. The great beacon on Talos 7. Kira had been 4 at the time, but she still remembered the moment the news had become public. The streets of Highstone had gone deathly quiet as everyone stared at their overlays, trying to digest the revelation that, no, humans weren't the only sentient race to have evolved in the galaxy. The story of Dr. Crichton, xenobiologist and member of the first expedition to the lip of the beacon, had been one of Kira's earliest and greatest inspirations for wanting to become a xenobiologist herself. In her more fanciful moments, she had sometimes daydreamed of making a discovery that was equally momentous, but the odds of that actually happening had seemed so remote as to be impossible. Kira forced herself to breathe again. She needed to keep a clear head. No one knew what had happened to the makers of the beacon. They were long dead or vanished, and nothing had been found to explain their nature, origin, or intentions. Did they make this as well? Whatever the truth, the room was a find of historic significance. Falling into it was probably the most important thing she would ever do in her life. The discovery would be news through the whole of settled space. There would be interviews, appearance requests, everyone would be talking about it. Hell, the paper she could publish. Entire careers had been built on far, far less. Her parents would be so proud, especially her dad. Further proof of intelligent aliens would delight him like nothing else. Priorities. First, she had to make sure she lived through the experience. For all she knew, the room could be an automated slaughterhouse. Kira double-checked her suit readouts, paranoid. Still no breaches. Good. She didn't have to worry about contamination from alien organisms. She activated her radio.
Nagar, do you read?
Silence. Kira tried again, but her system couldn't connect to the shuttle. Too much stone overhead, she guessed. She wasn't worried. Geiger would have alerted Nagar something was wrong as soon as the feed from her skin suit cut out. It shouldn't be long before help arrived. She'd need help, too. There was no way she could climb out by herself, not without gecko pads. The walls were over 4 meters high and devoid of handholds. Through the hole, she could see a blotch of sky, pale and distant. She couldn't tell exactly how far she'd fallen, but it looked like enough to place her well below ground level. At least it hadn't been a straight drop. Otherwise, she would probably be dead. Kira continued to study the room, not moving from where she stood. The chamber had no obvious entrances or exits. The pedestal that she had originally believed to be a stalagmite had a shallow, bowl-like depression in the top. A pool of dust had gathered within the depression, obscuring the color of the stone. As her eyes adjusted to the darkness, Kira saw long, blue-black lines cut into the walls and ceiling. The lines jagged at oblique angles, forming patterns similar to those of a primitive circuit board, although farther apart. Art? Language? Technology? Sometimes it was difficult to tell the difference. Was the place a tomb? Of course, the aliens might not bury their dead. There was no way of knowing. Thermal's up, Kira murmured. Her vision flipped, showing a muddy impression of the room, highlighted by the warmer patch of ground where the sunlight struck. No lasers. No artificial heat signatures of any sort. Thermal's down. The room could be studded with passive sensors, but if so, her presence hadn't triggered a noticeable response. Still, she had to assume she was being watched. A thought occurred to Kira, and she switched off the scanner on her belt. For all she knew, the signals from the device might seem threatening to an alien. She scrolled through the last set of readings from the scanner. Background radiation was higher than normal due to an accumulation of radon gas, while the walls, ceiling, and floor contained the same mixture of minerals and elements she'd recorded on the surface. Kira glanced at the blotch of sky again. Nagar wouldn't take long to reach the formation. Just a few minutes in the shuttle. A few minutes for Kira to examine the most important find of her life. Because once she was pulled out of the hole, Kira knew she wouldn't be allowed back in. By law, any evidence of alien intelligence had to be reported to the proper authorities in the League of Allied Worlds. They would quarantine the island, and probably a good portion of the continent, and send in their own team of experts to deal with the site. That didn't mean she was about to break protocol. As much as she wanted to walk around, look at things closer, Kira knew she had a moral obligation not to disturb the chamber any further. Preserving its current condition was more important than any personal ambition. So she held her ground, despite her almost unbearable frustration. If she could just touch the walls. Looking back at the pedestal, Kira noticed the structure was level with her waist. Did that mean the aliens were about the same size as humans? She shifted her stance, uncomfortable. The bruises on her legs were throbbing, despite the Norodon. A shiver ran through her, and she turned on the heater in her suit. It wasn't that cold in the room, but her hands and feet were freezing now that the adrenaline rush from the fall was subsiding. Across the room, a knot of lines, no bigger than her palm, caught her attention. Unlike elsewhere on the curving walls, the lines crack! Kira glanced toward the sound just in time to see a melon-sized rock dropping toward her from the opening in the ceiling. She yelped and stumbled forward awkwardly. Her legs tangled and she fell onto her chest hard. The rock slammed into the floor behind her, sending up a hazy billow of dust. It took Kira a second to catch her breath. Her pulse was hammering again, and at any moment she expected alarms to sound and some hideously effective countermeasure to dispose of her. But nothing happened. No alarms blared. No lights flashed. No trap doors opened up beneath her. No lasers poked her full of tiny holes. She pushed herself back onto her feet, ignoring the pain. The dust was soft beneath her boots, and it dampened the noise, so the only sound she heard was her feathered breathing. The pedestal was right in front of her. Damn it! Kira thought. She should have been more careful. Her instructors back in school would have ripped her a new one for falling, even if it was a mistake. She returned her attention to the pedestal. The depression in the top reminded her of a water basin. Beneath the pooled dust, there were more lines, scribed across the inner curve of the hollow. And as she looked closer, there seemed to be a faint blue glow emanating from them, soft and diffuse beneath the pollen-like particles. Her curiosity surged. Bioluminescence? Or was it powered by an artificial source? From outside the structure, she heard the rising roar of the shuttle's engines. She didn't have long, not more than a minute or two. Kira sucked on her lip. If only she could see more of the basin. She knew what she was about to do was wrong, but she couldn't help it. She had to learn something about this amazing artifact. She wasn't so stupid as to touch the dust. That was the sort of rookie mistake that got people eaten or infected or dissolved by acid. Instead, she took the small canister of compressed air off her belt and used it to gently blow the dust away from the edge of the basin. The dust flew up in swirled plumes, exposing the lines beneath. They were glowing, with an eerie hue that reminded her of an electrical discharge. Kira shivered again, but not from cold. It felt as if she were intruding on forbidden ground. Enough. She'd tempted fate far more than was wise. Time to make a strategic retreat. She turned to leave the pedestal. A jolt ran up her leg, as her right foot remained stuck to the floor. She yelped, surprised, and fell to one knee. As she did, the Achilles tendon in her frozen ankle wrenched and tore, and she uttered a howl. Blinking back tears, Kira looked down at her foot. Dust. A pile of black dust covered her foot. Moving. Seething. Dust. It was pouring out of the basin, down the pedestal and onto her foot. Even as she watched, it started to creep up her leg, following the contours of her muscles. Kira yelled and tried to yank her leg free, but the dust held her in place as securely as a mag lock. She tore off her belt, doubled it over, and used it to slap at the featureless mass. The blows failed to knock any of the dust loose.
Nagar! She shouted. Help!
Her heart pounding so loudly she could hear nothing else, Kira stretched the belt flat between her hands and tried to use it like a scraper on her thigh. The edge of the belt left a shallow impression in the dust, but otherwise had no effect. The swarm of particles had already reached the crease of her hip. She could feel them pressing in around her leg like a series of tight, ever-shifting bands. Kira didn't want to, but she had no other choice. With her right hand, she tried to grab the dust and pull it away. Her fingers sank into the swarm of particles as easily as foam. There was nothing to grab hold of. And when she drew her hand back, the dust came with it, wrapping around her fingers with ropey tendrils. She scrubbed her hand against the floor, but to no avail. Fear spiked through her as she felt something tickle her wrist, and she knew that the dust had found its way through the seams of her gloves.
Emergency override! Seal all cuffs!
Kira had difficulty saying the words. Her mouth was dry and her tongue seemed twice its normal size. Her suit responded instantly, tightening around each of her joints, including her neck, and forming airtight seals with her skin. It wasn't enough to stop the dust. Kira felt the cold tickle progress up her arm to her elbow, and then passed.
Mayday! Mayday!
She shouted.
Mayday! Nagar! Geiger! Mayday! Can anyone hear me? Help!
Outside the suit, the dust flowed over her visor, plunging her into darkness. Inside the suit, the tendrils wormed their way over her shoulder and across her neck and chest. Unreasoning terror gripped Kira. Terror and abhorrence. She jerked on her leg with all her strength. Something snapped in her ankle, but her foot remained anchored to the floor. She screamed and clawed at her visor, trying to clear it off. The dust oozed across her cheek and toward the front of her face. She screamed again, and then clamped her mouth shut, closed off her throat, and held her breath. Her heart felt as if it were going to explode.
Nagar!
The dust crept over her eyes, like the feet of 1,000 tiny insects. A moment later, it covered her mouth. And when it came,
The dry, squirming touch within her nostrils was no less horrible than she had imagined.
Stupid. Shouldn't have. Helen!
Kira saw his face in front of her, and along with her fear, she felt an overwhelming sense of unfairness. This wasn't supposed to be how things ended. Then the weight in her throat became too great, and she opened her mouth to scream as the torrent of dust rushed inside of her, and all went blank. Chapter 3. Extenuating Circumstances. 1. To start with, there was the awareness of awareness, then an awareness of pressure, soft and comforting. Later still, an awareness of sounds, a faint chirp that repeated, a distant rumble, the whir of recycled air. Last of all came an awareness of self, rising from within the depths of blackness. It was a slow process. The murk was thick and heavy, like a blanket of silt, and it stifled her thoughts, weighing them down and burying them in the deepness. The natural buoyancy of her consciousness prevailed, though, and in time, she woke. 2. Kira opened her eyes. She was lying on an exam table in sickbay at HQ. Above her, a pair of light strips striped the bracketed ceiling, blue-white and harsh. The air was cool and dry and smelled of familiar solvents. I'm alive. Why was that surprising? And how had she ended up in sickbay? Weren't they supposed to be leaving for the Fidanza? She swallowed, and the foul taste of hibernation fluids caused her to gag. Her stomach turned as she recognized the taste. Cryo? She'd been in fucking cryo? Why? For how long? What the hell had happened? Panic spiked her pulse, and Kira bolted upright, clawing at the blanket that covered her. Gah! She was wearing a thin medical gown, tied at the sides. The walls swam around her with cryo-induced vertigo. She pitched forward and fell off the table onto the white decking, heaving as her body tried to expel the poison inside of her. Nothing came up except drool and bile. Kira! She felt hands turning her over, and then Alan appeared above her, cradling her with gentle arms. Kira, he said again, his face pinched with concern. Shh, it's okay. I've got you now. Everything's okay. He looked nearly as bad as Kira felt. His cheeks were hollow, and there were lines around his eyes she didn't remember from that morning. Morning? How long? She croaked. Alan winced. Almost 4 weeks. No. Dread sank into her. 4 weeks? Unable to believe it, Kira checked her overlays. 1402 GST, Monday, August 16, 2257. Stunned, she read the date twice more. Alan was right. The last day she recalled, the day they'd been supposed to depart Adra, was the 21st of July. 4 weeks. Feeling lost, she searched Alan's face, hoping for answers. Why? He stroked her hair. What do you remember? Kira struggled to answer. Mendoza had told her to check on the downed drone, and then falling, pain, glowing lines, and darkness all around. She scrabbled backwards and clutched at her neck, heart pounding. It felt as if something were blocking her throat, suffocating her. Relax, said Alan, keeping a hand on her shoulder. Relax. You're safe now. Breathe. A clutch of agonized seconds, and then her throat loosened and she sucked in a breath, desperate for air. Kira shuddered and grabbed Alan and held him as tight as she could. She'd never been prone to panic attacks, not even during finals for her IPD. But the feeling of being suffocated had been so real. His voice muffled by her hair, Alan said, It's my fault. I should never have asked you to check out those rocks. I'm so sorry, babe.
No, don't apologize, she said, pulling back enough to look at his face. Someone had to do it. Besides, A found alien ruins. How amazing is that?
Pretty amazing, he admitted with a reluctant smile.
See? Now what?
Footsteps sounded outside sickbay and Faisal walked in. He was slim and dark and kept a short, faded haircut that never seemed to grow out. Today he was wearing his clinician's jacket and his cuffs were rolled back as if he'd been giving an exam. On seeing Kira, he leaned back out the doorway and shouted,
"She's up!"
Then he sauntered past the three patient beds set along the wall, picked up a chip lab off the small counter, squatted next to Kira and grabbed her wrist.
"Open. Say ah."
"Ah." In quick succession, he looked in her mouth and ears, checked her pulse and blood pressure, and felt under her jaw, saying,
"Does this hurt?"
"No." He nodded, a sharp gesture.
"You'll be fine. Make sure to drink lots of water. You'll need it after being in cryo."
"I have been frozen before," said Kira, as Alan helped her back onto the exam table. Faisal's mouth twisted.
"Just doing my job, Nevarez."
"Uh-huh." Kira scratched her forearm. As much as she hated to admit it, the doctor was right. She was dehydrated, and her skin was dry and itchy.
"Here,"
said Alan, and handed her a water pouch. As Kira took a sip, Maria Elise, Jenin, and Seppo rushed into sick bay.
"Kira!"
"There you are.
Welcome back, sleepyhead."
Behind them, Ivanova appeared, arms crossed, no nonsense.
"Well, it's about time, Nevarez."
Then Hugo, Nagar, and Mendoza joined them as well, and the entire survey team crowded into sickbay, packing in so close that Kira felt the heat from their bodies and the touch of their breath. It was a welcome cocoon of life. And yet, despite the nearness of her friends, Kira still felt odd and unsettled, as if the universe were out of joint, like a tilted mirror, partly because of the week she had lost, partly, she thought, because of whatever drugs Faisal had pumped into her, and partly because, if she allowed herself to sink into the depths of her mind, she could still feel something lurking there, waiting for her. A horrible, choking, suffocating presence, like wet clay being pressed into her nose and mouth. She dug the nails of her right hand into her left forearm and inhaled sharply, nostrils flaring. No one but Alan seemed to notice. He gave her a worried glance and his arm tightened around her waist. Kira shook herself in an attempt to dislodge her thoughts, and looking around at them all said,
"So, who's going to fill me in?"
Mendoza grunted.
"Give us your report first and then we'll bring you up to speed."
It took Kira a moment to realize that the team hadn't come just to greet her. There was an anxious look to them, and as she studied their faces, she saw the same signs of stress as on Alan. Whatever they had been dealing with for the past 4 weeks, it hadn't been easy.
Is this gonna be on the record, boss?"
she asked. Mendoza's face remained hard and fixed, unreadable.
"On the record, Nevarez. And it won't just be the company seeing it either."
"Shit," she swallowed, still tasting the hibernation fluids on the back of her tongue.
"Could we do this in an hour or two? I'm pretty out of it."
"No can do, Nevarez."
He hesitated and then added,
"It's better talking to us rather than—
Someone else,"
said Ivanova.
"Exactly."
Kara's confusion deepened, her worry too. She glanced at Alan, and he nodded and gave her a comforting squeeze. Okay, if he thought this was the right thing to do, then she'd trust him. She took a breath. "The last thing I remember is heading out to check on the organic material the drone tagged before crashing. Nagar Esfahani was piloting. We landed on island number—" It didn't take Kira long to summarize what had followed,
ending with her fall into the strange rock formation and the room deep within.
She did her best to describe the room, but at that point her memory became so disjointed as to be unusable. Had the lines on the pedestal really been glowing, or was that an artifact of her imagination?
"And that's all you saw?"
said Mendoza. Kira scratched at her arm.
"It's all I remember. I think I tried to stand up, and then—"
She shook her head.
"Everything after that is blank."
The expedition boss scowled and stuffed his hands in his overall pockets. Alan kissed her on the temple.
"I'm sorry you had to go through that."
"Did you touch anything?"
Mendoza said. Kira thought.
"Just where I fell."
Are you sure? When Nagar pulled you out, there were marks in the dust on and around the pillar in the center of the room.
As I said, the last thing I remember is trying to stand up.
She cocked her head.
Why don't you check the recording from my suit? Mendoza surprised her by grimacing.
The fall damaged your suit's sensors. The telemetry is useless. Your implants weren't much help either. They stopped recording 43 seconds after you entered the room. Faisal says that's not uncommon with traumatic head injuries.
Were my implants damaged? Kira asked, suddenly concerned. Her overlays seemed normal.
Your implants, said Faisal, are in perfect working order.
His lip curled.
More than can be said for the rest of you.
She stiffened, unwilling to let him see how frightened that made her. Just how badly was I hurt? Alan started to answer, but the doctor overrode him.
Hairline fractures in two ribs. Chipped cartilage in your right elbow along with a strained tendon. Fractured ankle, ruptured Achilles, multiple bruises and lacerations, and a moderate to severe concussion accompanied by cerebral swelling.
Faisal ticked off each injury on his fingers as he spoke.
I repaired most of the damage. The rest will heal in a few weeks. In the meantime, you may experience some soreness.
At that, Kira nearly laughed. Sometimes humor was the only rational response.
I was really worried about you, Alan said.
We all were, said Marie-Elise.
Yeah, said Kira,
tightening her hold on Alan. She could only imagine what it had been like for him, waiting for her these past weeks.
So, Nagar, you managed to haul me out of that hole?
The woman wobbled her hand in front of her.
So-so. It took some doing.
But you got me out.
Sure did, honey. Next chance I get, I'm buying you a whole case of cinnamon rolls.
Mendoza snared Faisal's exam stool and sat. He rested his hands on his knees, arms straight.
What she's not telling you is... You know what? Tell her. Go ahead and tell her.
Nagar rubbed her arms.
Shit.
Well, you were unconscious, so I had to strap us together so I could keep you from getting your head ripped off or something when Geiger winched you out. There wasn't much room in the tunnel you fell through, and well...
She tore her skin suit, said Jenin.
Nagar extended a hand toward him.
That full...
A cough interrupted her, and she doubled over for a moment, hacking. Her lungs sounded wet, as if she had bronchitis.
Full pressure breach. Was a bitch to patch with one hand while hanging from a harness.
Which meant, said Mendoza, that Nagar had to be quarantined along with you. We ran every test in the book, including some that aren't. They all came up negative, but you were still unresponsive.
Which was scary as fuck, said Alan.
And since we didn't know what we were dealing with, I decided it was better to put both of you into cryo until we got a handle on the situation.
Kira winced.
Sorry about that. Don't worry about it, said Nagar.
Faisal thumped himself on the chest.
What if poor me? You forget about me. Cryo is easy. I had to stay in quarantine for almost a month after working on you, Nevarez. A month.
And I appreciate your help, said Kira.
Thank you.
She meant it, too. A month in quarantine would wear on anyone.
Bah! You shouldn't have been poking your bony nose where it didn't belong. You...
Enough,
said Mendoza in a mild tone, and the doctor subsided, but not without flicking his index and middle fingers toward her in a way that Kira had learned was a rude gesture. A very rude gesture. She took another sip of water to fortify herself.
So, why did you wait so long to thaw us out?
Her gaze shifted back to Nagar.
Or did they wake you up sooner?
Nagar coughed again.
2 days ago.
Around the room, Kira noticed faces tightening, and the mood growing tense, uncomfortable.
What is it?
She asked. Before Mendoza could answer, the roar of a firing rocket, louder than any of their shuttles, sounded outside, and the walls of the compound shuddered as if from a minor earthquake. Kira flinched, but none of the others seemed surprised.
What was that?
On her overlays, she checked the feed from the cameras outside. All she could see were billows of smoke expanding from the landing pad some distance from the buildings. The roar quickly receded as whatever vessel was taking off vanished into the upper atmosphere. Mendoza stabbed a finger toward the ceiling.
That's the problem. After Nagar brought you back, I told Captain Ravenna, and she sent an emergency flash to the suits at 61 Cygni. After that, the Fidanza went radio silent.
Kira nodded. That made sense. The law was clear.
In the event of discovering intelligent alien life, they were to take all necessary measures to avoid leading those aliens back to settled space.
Not that a technologically advanced species would have much difficulty finding the League if they were motivated to look.
Ravenna was spitting antimatter, she was so mad, said Mendoza. The crew of the Fidanza weren't planning on having to stay here for more than a few days. He waved a hand. In any case, once corporate got the message, they alerted the Department of Defense. A couple of days later, the UMC dispatched one of their cruisers, the Extenuating Circumstances, from 61 Cygni. They arrived in system about 4 days ago and...
And ever since, they've been a royal pain in the ass, said Ivanova.
Literally, said Seppo.
Bastards,
Nagar muttered. The UMC. Kira had seen enough of the League's military both on and off Wayland to know how they tended to run roughshod over local concerns. One of the reasons, she thought, was the relative newness of the service. The League, and thus the United Military Command, had only been created in the wake of the discovery of the Great Beacon. A coming together had been needed, the politicians claimed, given the implications of the Beacon. Growing pains were to be expected. But the other reason for the UMC's often callous disregard, Kira believed, was the imperialistic attitude of Earth and the rest of Sol. They thought nothing of ignoring the rights of the colonies in favor of what was best for Earth, or what they called the greater good. Good for whom, though? Another grunt from Mendoza. Captain of the Extenuating Circumstances is a cat-eyed SOB by the name of Henriksen. Real piece of work. His main concern was that Nagar here had picked up some sort of contamination in those ruins. So Henriksen sent down his doctor and a team of xenobiologists, and they set up a clean room and spent the past 2 days poking and prodding us until we puked, said Jenin.
Literally, said Seppo.
Maria Lise nodded.
It was so unpleasant, Kira. You are lucky you are still in cryo.
I guess, she said slowly. Faisal snorted.
They irradiated every single centimeter of our skin, multiple times. They x-rayed us. They gave us MRIs and CAT scans, ran full blood panels, sequenced our DNA, examined our urine and feces, and took biopsies. You may notice a slight mark on your abdomen from the liver sample. They even cataloged our gut bacteria.
And? Said Kira, glancing from face to face.
Nothing, said Mendoza. Clean bill of health. For Nagar, for you, for all of us.
Kira frowned. Wait, they tested me also?
You better believe it, said Ivanova.
Why, do you think you're too special to be examined?
Asked Faisal. His tone set Kira's teeth on edge.
No, I just...
She felt weird, violated even, knowing those procedures had been performed on her while she was unconscious, even if they had been necessary to maintain proper biocontainment. Mendoza seemed to pick up on her discomfort. He eyed her from beneath his heavy brows. Captain Henriksen made it abundantly clear that the only reason he isn't keeping us under lock and key is because they found nothing unusual. Nagar is the one they were really worried about, but they weren't going to let any of us off Adrastea until they were sure.
You can't blame them, said Kira. I'd be doing the same in their place.
Hard to be too careful in this sort of situation. Mendoza huffed.
I don't blame them for that. It's the rest of it. They put us under a strict gag order. We can't even talk to corporate about what we found. If we do, it's a felony and up to 20 years in prison.
How long is the gag order? His shoulders rose and fell.
Indefinite.
There went Kira's plans for publication, at least in the near term. How are we supposed to explain why we're returning so late from Adra?
Drive malfunction on the Fidanza resulting in unavoidable delays. You'll find the details in your messages. Memorize them.
Yes, sir. She scratched her arm again. She needed lotion. Well, that's a hassle, but it's not that bad. A pained expression crossed Alan's face.
Oh, it gets worse, babe. A lot worse.
Kira's sense of dread returned.
Worse?
Mendoza nodded slowly, as if his head was way too heavy for his neck.
The UMC didn't just quarantine the island.
Nope,
said Ivanova.
That would have been too easy.
Faisal slammed his hand down on the counter.
Just tell her already. They quarantined the whole damn system, okay? We lost Adra. It's gone. Poof!
3. Kira sat next to Alan in the mess hall, studying a live image of the extenuating circumstances taken from orbit and projected from the hollow in front of them. The ship must have been half a kilometer long, stark white, with a spindly midsection, bulbous engine at one end, and a pedal-like arrangement of spinning decks at the other. The habitat sections were hinged so they could lie flat against the stem of the ship when under thrust, a costly option that most vessels went without. At the nose of the extenuating circumstances were several ports, like shuttered eyes, missile tubes, and lenses for the ship's main laser. A quarter of the way down the ship, a pair of identical shuttles fitted snugly against either side of the hull. The shuttles were far larger than the ones the survey team had used. Kira wouldn't be surprised if they were equipped with Markov drives, same as a full-sized spaceship. The most striking feature of the extenuating circumstances was the banks of radiators that lined its midsection, starting directly behind the habitats and continuing all the way down to the swell of the engine. The edges of the diamond fins flashed and gleamed as they caught the light of the sun, and the tubes of molten metal embedded within the fins shone like silver veins. In all, the ship looked like a huge, deadly insect, thin, sharp, and glittery. "Hey," said Alan, and she tore her attention away from the overlays to see him holding out her engagement ring, almost as if he were proposing again. "Thought you might want this." Despite her worries, Kira softened for a moment, feeling a welcome warmth. "Thank you," she said, slipping the iron band onto her finger. "I'm glad I didn't lose it in that cave." "Me too." Then he leaned in close and murmured, "Missed you." She kissed him. "Sorry for making you worry."
"Congratulations to the both of you, Shelley," said Marie Elise,
and she wiggled her finger from Kira to Alan.
"Yeah, congrats,"
said Jenin, and everyone else added their well wishes. Everyone but Mendoza, who was off radioing Ravenna to set up a pickup time for the following day, and Faisal, who was cleaning his fingernails with a plastic butter knife. Kira smiled, pleased and somewhat self-conscious. "Hope you don't mind," said Alan, bending down toward her. "I kind of let it slip when it looked like you weren't going to wake up." She leaned back against him and gave him another quick kiss. "Mine," she thought.
"It's fine," she murmured.
Then Hugo came over to them and knelt by the end of the table so he wasn't looming over Kira.
"Do you think you can eat?"
he asked her.
"It would do you some good."
Kira wasn't hungry, but she knew he was right.
"I can try."
He nodded, spade-shaped chin touching the top of his chest.
"I'll warm up some stew for you. You'll like it. Nice and easy on the stomach."
As he lumbered away, Kira returned her attention to the extenuating circumstances. She scrubbed at her arms again, and then started to fiddle with the ring on her finger. Her head was still spinning from Mendoza's revelation, and her earlier sense of disassociation had returned even stronger than before. She hated that all their work over the past 4 months had been for nothing. But more than that, she hated the thought of losing the future she and Alan had planned together on Adrastea. If they weren't going to settle there, then... Alan must have guessed what she was thinking, because he leaned down so his lips were close to her ear and said, "Don't worry, we'll find another place. It's a big galaxy." And that was why she loved him. She hugged him tighter. "What I don't understand," she started to say.
"There are a lot of things I don't understand," said Jenin. "Like who keeps leaving their napkins in the sink?"
And he held up a soggy piece of cloth. Kira ignored him.
"How can the League expect to keep any of this a secret? People are going to notice that a whole system has been marked off limits."
Seppo hopped up to sit cross-legged on one of the tables. With his slight stature, he seemed almost childlike.
"Easy. They announced the travel ban a week ago. The story is we discovered a contagious pathogen in the biosphere, something like the Scourge. Until containment is assured."
"Sigma Draconis stays quarantined," said Ivanova.
Kira shook her head.
"Shit. I don't suppose they let us keep any of our data."
"Nope,"
said Nagar.
"Nada,"
said Jenin.
"Nothing,"
said Seppo.
"Zip,"
said Ivanova. Alan rubbed her shoulder. "Mendoza said he'd talk with corporate when we get back to Viborg. They might be able to convince the League to release everything unrelated to the ruins."
"Small chance of that," said Faisal.
He blew on his nails and then continued cleaning them.
"Not with the League. They'll keep your little discovery a secret for as long as they can.
The only reason they ever told anyone about Talos 7 is because there's no way to hide the damn thing.
He wagged his butter knife at Kira.
You cost the company a whole planet. Pleased with yourself?
I was doing my job, she said. If anything, it's good I found the ruins now before anyone settled on Adra. It would cost a hell of a lot more to ship a whole colony back off-world.
Seppo and Nagar nodded. Faisal sneered.
Yeah, well, that still doesn't make up for screwing us out of our bonuses.
They canceled our bonuses, Kira said flatly. Alan made an apologetic face. Corporate said it was on account of project failure.
Sucks, too, said Jennin. I got kids to feed, you know. It would have made a big difference.
Me too.
Same. Two ex-husbands and a cat ain't... If you'd only... Don't know how I'm gonna...
Kira's cheeks burned as she listened. It wasn't her fault. And yet it was. The whole team had lost out because of her. What a disaster. At the time, she thought finding the alien structure was going to be good for the company. Good for the team. But it had just ended up hurting them. She glanced at the logo printed on the wall of the mess hall. Lapsang, printed in the familiar angular font with a leaf over the second A. The company was always running ads and promotional campaigns touting their loyalty to customers, colonists, and employee citizens. Forging the future together. That had been the slogan she'd grown up hearing. She snorted. Yeah, right. When it mattered, they were just like any other interstellar corporation. Bits before people.
Damn it, she said. We did the work. We fulfilled our contract. They shouldn't punish us for it.
Faisal rolled his eyes.
And if starships farted rainbows, wouldn't that be lovely? My God. Oh, you feel bad. So sorry. Who cares? That's not going to get us our bonuses back.
He glared at her.
You know, it would have been better if you tripped and broke your neck as soon as you stepped out of the shuttle.
A brief, shocked silence followed. Next to her, Kira felt Alan stiffen.
You take that back, he said.
Faisal tossed the knife into the sink.
Didn't want to be here anyway. Waste of time.
And he spat on the floor. Ivanova hopped away from the gob of saliva.
God damn it, Faisal!
The doctor smirked and sauntered off. There was someone like him on every mission, Kira had learned. A sour shitheel who seemed to take perverse pleasure in being the piece of grit stuck in everyone's teeth. The others started talking the moment Faisal was out of sight.
Don't mind him, said Marie-Elise.
Could have happened to any one of us.
Same old duck, always.
Should have heard what he said when I thought out he...
The conversation stalled as Mendoza appeared in the doorway. He gave them a measured look.
There a problem in here?
No, sir.
We're good, boss man.
He grunted and trundled over to Kira, and, in a lower voice, said, Sorry about that, Navarez. Nerves have been stretched a bit tight the past few weeks. Kira smiled wanly.
It's okay,
really. Another grunt, and Mendoza took a seat by the far wall, and the room soon returned to normal. Despite her reply, Kira couldn't seem to lose the knot of unease in her gut. Too much of what Faisal had said struck home. Also, it bothered her not knowing what she and Alan were going to do now. Everything she'd laid out in her mind for the next few years had been overturned by that damned alien structure. If only the drone hadn't gone down. If only she hadn't agreed to check the site for Mendoza. If only... She started as Hugo touched her on the arm.
Here,
he said, and handed her a bowl filled with stew and a plate piled with steamed vegetables, a slice of bread, and half of what must have been their only remaining bar of chocolate.
Thanks,
she murmured, and he smiled. 4. Kira hadn't realized how hungry she was. She felt weak and shaky. The food didn't sit well, though. She was too upset, and her stomach kept rumbling from a combination of anxiety and the remnants of cryo. From his spot on the neighboring table, Seppo said,
We've been trying to decide whether the ruins here were made by the same aliens who made the Great Beacon. What do you think, Kira?
She noticed the others watching her. She swallowed, put down her fork, and in her best professional voice said,
It seems unlikely that two sentient species could have evolved so close together. If I had to bet, I'd say yes, but there's no knowing for sure.
Hey, there's us, said Ivanova. Humans, we're in the same general region.
In the corner, Nagar was coughing again, a wet, meaty sound that Kira found off-putting. Jennin said,
Yeah, but there's no telling how much territory the Beacon Xenos covered. It could have been half the galaxy for all we know.
I think we would have found more evidence of them if that were the case, said Alan.
Well, didn't we just?
Said Jennan. Kira had no easy answer to that. Did you learn anything more about the site while I was in cryo?
Said
Nagar, and held up a hand while she struggled to finish coughing into her sleeve.
Gah! Sorry. Throat's been dry all day. Yeah, I ran some subsurface imaging before I pulled you out of the hole.
And?
There's another chamber right below the one you discovered. It's pretty small, though, only a meter across. It might be housing a power source, but it's impossible to tell for sure without opening it up. Thermals didn't pick up any heat signature.
How large is the whole structure?
Everything you saw above ground, plus another 12 meters below. Aside from the rooms, it looks like just solid foundation and walls.
Kira nodded, thinking. Whoever had made the structure, they had built it to last. Then Maria Elise said in her high, flute-like voice,
The building you found doesn't seem like the same sort of work as the beacon. That is, it's such a small thing in comparison.
The Great Beacon. It had been discovered out on the edge of explored space, 36.6 light-years from Sol, and 43-some light-years from Wayland. Kira didn't need to check her overlays to know the distances. She'd spent hours upon hours as a teen reading about the expedition. The beacon itself was an amazing artifact. It was, quite simply, a hole. A very large hole. 50 kilometers across and 30 deep, surrounded by a net of liquid gallium that acted as a giant antenna. For the hole emitted a powerful EMP burst every 5.2 seconds, and with it, a blast of structured noise that contained ever-evolving iterations of the Mandelbrot set in ternary code. Attending the beacon were creatures that had been dubbed turtles, although Kira thought they looked more like ambulatory boulders. Even after 23 years of study, it still wasn't clear if they were animals or machines. No one had been foolish enough to attempt a dissection. The xenobiologists and the engineers agreed it was unlikely the turtles had been responsible for the beacon's construction, not unless they'd lost all their technology. But who or what was responsible was still a mystery. As for its ultimate purpose, no one had any idea. The only thing they knew for sure was that the beacon was around 16,000 years old, and even that was merely a rough estimate based on radiometric dating. Kira had an uncomfortable suspicion she might never find out whether or not the makers of the beacon had anything to do with the room she'd fallen into, not even if she lived for several hundred more years. Deep time was slow to surrender its secrets, if it ever did. She sighed and dragged the tines of her fork across the side of her neck, enjoying the sensation of the metal tips on her dry skin.
Who cares about the beacon? Said Seppo, hopping down from his table. What really bothers me is that we can't even make money off this mess. Can't talk about it, can't publish, can't go on the talk shows.
Can't sell the entertainment rights, said Ivanova in a mocking tone.
They laughed, and Jennan called out,
As if anyone would want to see your ugly face.
He ducked as she threw her gloves at him. Chuckling, he offered them back to her. Kira hunched her shoulders, her sense of guilt strengthening. Sorry for the trouble, everyone. If there was anything I could do to fix this, I would.
Yeah, you sure dicked things up good this time, said Ivanova.
Did you have to go exploring?
Jennan said, but he didn't sound serious.
Don't worry about it, said Nagar. It could have...
A cough interrupted her, and Maria Elise finished what she'd been saying.
It could have been any of us.
Nagar bobbed her head in agreement. From the wall where he was sitting, Mendoza said,
I'm just glad you weren't too badly hurt, Kira. You and Nagar. We lucked out. All of us.
We still lost the colony, Kira said. And our bonuses. A sharp glint appeared in Mendoza's dark eyes.
Somehow I think your find will more than make up for those bonuses. Might take years. Might take decades. But as long as we're smart, it'll happen. Sure as death and taxes.